This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 1st of September, 2022. Another markdown in equities as we had a late sell-off in treasuries that took U.S. yields higher all along the curve. I think that was sort of helped to spook markets a bit. And we followed through a bit lower overnight. This strong dollar also serving to, I think, spook risk sentiment worldwide. And we have some interesting technical views rolling into view here. The NASDAQ 100 and on the S&P 500, for that matter, the 61.8% retracement of the big rally wave off of those June lows. It's coming in around 12,900 or so on the NASDAQ 100, 3902 on the S&P 500. That's at least on the future. Cash index levels might be a bit different here, of course. So just an ugly day across the board. I think we're all spooked by what's going on here with yields going higher, dollar going higher. It's a pinch on global liquidity. Peter, I don't know if you saw any notable triggers besides what I've just mentioned there.
No, I think it is the move higher in interest rates, but also you had worse than expected PMI figures both out of South Korea and China. And it was followed by some ugly announcements, Snap laying off people. We'll get back to that. And also Seagate talking about Asia slowing down. And if you look at the leading indicators, they are not in a free fall like during the pandemic, but they're almost in a free fall. At least they are deteriorating more rapidly than going into the great financial crisis. So keep in mind that the leading indicators from the Conference Board of the U.S. their outlook or the way the model is set up is to do predictions on 6 months forward, and it's at zero now. So we're getting very close to negative by next month. So I think that's the key driver. I think the S&P 500, you have put up a NASDAQ chart. I try to sort of look less and less on the NASDAQ and to get a more broader economic picture by the S&P 500. The 3,900 is sort of the next support level, and then 3,800, if depending on where the interest rates go from here. I've put in on slide two the theme basket overview, so you can see how the month of August ended, and clear tendencies for in the commodities again was bid, cybersecurity was doing well, and then it's just a long tail of losses across a lot of different themes. Whereas defense is probably the one that I find the most puzzling, was down 5%. Makes no sense in my mind given the world we are approaching.
We've had some interesting, I don't want to have this discussion now, but it reminded me of that discussion we had about defense and our discussion of how this hot war on the ground in Europe is showing that maybe some of these big ticket items are not how hot wars of the future will be fought, because they're so vulnerable to some of these smarter and more rapid weapons, everything from missiles to drones. So it could be a very different mix of spending there rather than just defense per se. But we'll have that discussion another time. You're right, of course, it is an interesting development given what's going on in the world. And then your perspectives here on valuations, as you indicate on slide three, getting a lot closer to neutral than we've been in quite a while.
Yeah, we hit neutral in June. We came up in July, and now a little bit down here in August because equities were selling off. I'm highlighting something new I've done is the scorecard to the right, as you can see. So these are basically, so you have the Saxo's valuation model here in C scores, and then you have where the 10-year yield is on the C score, and also the revenue growth, operating margin, and the inflation, the core inflation here. And so what I'm highlighting here is the operating margin. So we have operating margins in the S&P 500 MSCI World, two standard deviations above the historical average since 1995. This is the key downside risk to equities right now. I think the Q2 earnings season that saw a jump in profit margins, it was great, but I think it was a head fake. I think Q3 and Q4 will begin to see companies, they will try to cut their costs to preserve margins, and they will do it because they think also they cannot, they will be unable to pass on these rising costs to consumers, because eventually it will really begin to impact sales on the volume side. So I think that a lot of companies will begin to eat into their margins, and that will really begin to hurt profit growth for companies.
And then I like your refresh of the drawdown profile on slide four. There's the saying that history doesn't repeat, it rhymes. So far we're repeating in a lot of ways, though, that 2007 to 9 drawdown in the profile so far. So this seasonally being an interesting time of year as well, there was all the talk that September is traditionally a weak, one of the weaker calendar months for the equity market.
Yeah, we updated it because we had that you could call it a bear market rally that started in early July and went into mid August, and now we've come down again. We are currently sitting at a minus 17.6% drawdown, and you're absolutely right. I think we don't know for sure exactly where the where how deep this drawdown will run. My own thinking or best guess is somewhere between 30 and 35%. That has been my sort of idea all along. And we can one day go into more details of why I think that's where we're going. I think it's actually going to be the length of this, John, because if the leading indicators are right, Steen mentioned in the internal call, let's say we get a recession in 6 months' time from now, then it's Q2 next year, right? And when those headlines hit, so they will probably have a weak equity market leading into that point, and then they will weaken further because suddenly now we have the recession and some will panic. So maybe we'll see the bottom in this market by summer next year, and that will make this drawdown quite lengthy, on par, I think, with the Great Financial Crisis and the early 70s drawdown.
All right. Now, I want to bring the discussion to you a little bit here because we've seen a very interesting development on slide five. You can see on the right-hand side they're putting in this German year four power contract, which on the as we're seeing Russian gas supplies to the Nord Stream 1 shut down for a few days, purportedly for maintenance, and purportedly it will come back online in a couple of days. We've seen this contract almost half from its peak there. There's similar developments in the French market. It makes you wonder to what degree is this reflective of anything? But what are your immediate thoughts here, and as well as the natural gas situation and pricing?
Well, I think what it's first and foremost showing is a market that's been gripped by panic and very, very low liquidity. What you have to keep in mind, and I think that's probably surprising to most, that this 1 year contract is a monster in terms of contract size, and thereby also the amount of initial margin that you need to post in order to trade just one lot. Right now, it's around 1.7 million euros per each contract. That basically means that this market is really only for the very big boys. Some of them potentially quite trigger happy, looking for squeezes, looking for big moves in the market, and obviously that's what we've seen this past couple of weeks. So just keep that in mind. You need to cough up at least 1.7 million euros just to trade one lot. So this is not a market for this is not a market that's where there's a broad participation, and that obviously leaves it very exposed to these kind of moves. And last week was obviously a panic. There were some shorts in the market that needed to be covered almost at any cost, and now we're seeing the subsequent move down. So obviously supported by gas prices, which are trading lower for the third day, or probably even the fourth day. A little bit more sanguine views on Nord Stream 1. Gazprom obviously still saying that they will reopen at 1 GMT on the 3rd of September, and that has just taken some of the sting out of the market. And if they do open, then as we also, I think we mentioned yesterday, we could see gas prices return to a level around that 200 euro per megawatt hour. Still very high, but enough, and still high and high enough to curb demand into the winter months.
Yeah, I have some further thoughts though that I'm wondering if there's some element of this concern, forward concern, that the EU is going to move to cap prices. And we've talked about this a little bit yesterday, and you see this meeting coming up next Friday. It is next Friday, by the way, a summit on energy prices. And of course, the end result is the same. You can not cap energy prices and then demand shrinks, or you can cap energy prices, but then you need to ration demand because otherwise you'll have brownouts, for example, if it's electricity. And you're seeing things like as well, this thing that Bloomberg I've forwarded G7 or put a headline on slide five, G7 to discuss the cap on prices of Russian oil. That's an interesting move, trying to cap what Russia is able to charge. And then a tweet from Christophe Barrot talking about the French finance minister saying exactly on the rationing front, we need to prepare for a hard winter with less gas available and need to think about rationing of gas to industry. So I think that could be a path going forward. And I wonder if as a transition to the FX market, that's been behind some of this big resurgence in the euro, more about that and less about the ECB waxing far more credible on rate tightening plans. I think that is, of course, important. But just all this talk that means that inflation levels might be controlled via caps and rationing rather than via crushing demand, you know, from, for example, raising rates. You know, we've seen the euro crosses back up because, as we see, maybe less transfer out of Europe to, for example, Norway for their oil and gas if they sort of strong arm Norway into participating in whatever scheme. So we've seen an enormous backup in the Norwegian krona to the downside, or backup in euro knocking downside for the Norwegian krona. Yes, some of that was yesterday on the Norges Bank announcing far more NOK sales, but that's historically not always been a one-to-one correlation between what they're doing and the direction of the Norwegian krona. Some of that simply reflects the enormous profits coming in from the oil industry and gas industry that needs to be diversified. But I think it's a significant move and a story that needs to be tracked. Now, this is not necessarily at all EU economy positive in the longer term. Again, if you're rationing, that means somebody's not getting the gas, which means there's GDP that's not happening. So that marks your GDP lower. But I think in the first instance, it's sort of led to the idea that maybe Europe is going to figure out a way to strong arm to prevent some of these current account shortfalls and to deal with the price situation in a different way than what the assumption has been thus far, at least preventing prices from simply running amok to the upside. Sterling in a far weaker spot on that same front and is running lower, as you see on the overview on slide six on the FX board, the trend measures. And the dollar, as we noted at the top of the program, remaining strong on that treasury outlook, and the U.S. Sort of sitting above all of this. And as the Fed tightens, it tightens global liquidity and all the debt out there denominated in dollars that needs to be serviced. So a concern there. All right, let's I don't know where to go next. So we've seen talking about volatility and prices for energy. Crude oil is all over the map. And, you know, there's this issue that you've already talked about a lot, a little bit, the whole paper barrels versus real barrels and tightness in the physical market. Is the futures market sending misleading signals?
Well, I think it's sending a signal that it's suffering from a very low conviction rate. We're seeing that in the open interest. That's on the slide 70 on the right hand chart, where you can see the combined open interest in Brent and crude oil, Brent and WTI, has dropped to a 7-year low, and that's obviously reducing the underlying size of the market, and thereby making it much more prone to respond to developments as they occur. We've seen a $10 drop within almost 24 hours, which is clearly not something that's which is not reflecting any new developments in the physical market. So it's just kind of volatility we have to get used to. I think we're getting close to levels where the Saudi minister last week talked about cutting production. OPEC meets on Monday, so it'll be very interesting to see what kind of comments they'll give on Monday, whether we'll try to defend prices closer to $100 than where we're seeing them right now.
And as you said, Peter, talking about the percentage of GDP that's going to energy, it becomes very geopolitical very fast, these levels of oil and gas prices. I just wonder if this is really getting into the mix here with the geopolitical stance, whether the Saudi can, quote unquote, get away with doing whatever it wants to do on setting the price without some attempt by whoever it is and amongst the trading partners getting a bit upset in some sort of political way. So I think that's an interesting angle to all of this. And then if you want to pick up the thread further, I think this strong dollar, higher U.S. yields, it's just a big pressure on gold because dollar yields higher. It's not a good mix for gold.
Exactly. I'll put on a piece later today just to an update on the metal market. So I'll keep it briefly. Just on slide eight, just showing that the massive drop we've seen in silver, it's hit a 2-year low. It's back into this old consolidation area between 16.5 and 18.5, obviously very wide. Some support down towards 17.25 today. But it is the combination of lower gold prices and also the renewed weakness that we saw in copper. Even though copper, there was a news out yesterday, the Chile production dropped for a second month in a row. So basically supply is not living up to expectations at that point in time. And that will, I think, eventually help stabilize this market. But right now, the market is obviously worried about the growth outlook, and with that, silver as usual is the one that's taking it on the chin and suffering some big corrections.
Let's go to the stocks to watch today, Peter. With slide nine, you're looking at, as you mentioned at the top of the program, the Seagate and Snap and talks of, at least in the case of Snap, actual reductions in the workforce.
Yeah, so Seagate were cutting its revenue outlook. They're saying that the macroeconomic backdrop is deteriorating. I think this is going. This is now clearly the broad based picture we're getting from a lot of companies, and they're highlighting specifically Asia. So I think that sort of indicates the slowdown we're seeing in PMI figures in South Korea and China. I also say that the Chinese authorities' decision to do a lockdown of Chengdu due to COVID outbreaks, I think, is an early warning signal of the coming risk into the winter period here in the Northern Hemisphere, that we could get more supply disruptions. I've said this many times before. I don't think it's something the market has sort of forgot about, but nothing has really changed in China in terms of the vaccines they have available. And, you know, I think the outbreaks will just probably continue here and there and shut down things, which make things quite bad. We have Snap. They said that they are on track to do 8% revenue gain for the quarter, the current quarter they're in, which is well below the target. And as a consequence of that, they're laying off 20% of their workforce. And I mean, look at that chart of Snap here on slide 9. I mean, it's an incredible, incredible chart. Turbocharged during the pandemic. Everyone wanted to do online online advertising because the physical world was in dire straits and everyone was locked up. And look at how it's just come down. It has erased everything. And then we have MongoDB, a software, database software provider. Their shares were down 19% in extended trading. They actually increased their revenue outlook, both for the coming quarter and the entire fiscal year as a whole. But they also guided a loss that was significantly wider than priced in currently in the stock. So apparently, for some odd reason, a lot of companies have finally got the memo: get your profitability in order before revenue grows. That's what the market is demanding. But apparently, MongoDB's management is having a different view on things. But I think you know, a 20-25% you know, decline in the stock price can do a lot of things to the management's discipline, because it goes into the share based compensation, and then you have employees that are angry. I should also say, you know, Snap is laying off 20% of their workforce. 3M, which is a massive industrial company in the US, they have 100,000 employees. They also said yesterday that they will now fast track layoffs in their businesses because the economy is deteriorating. So not so great news coming out of the US right now on the employee side.
Interesting. I guess this you've highlighted Lululemon on the earnings on slide 10, that the share price there rolled over in late, I guess a little bit later than the actual market. No, around the same time as the whole market rolled over in late 2021. Is that simply passively following the market here, or is there a special story with Lululemon?
No, I'm just flagging Lululemon. We did the story earlier this week that the rising energy cost has pulled out, you know, 6-7.5 percentage point of GDP, and that has to come from somewhere if you're spending it on, you know, cost of living things. So the most likely scenario is that things are being pulled out of consumer discretionaries, that these are typically things you don't really need, but they're nice to have, but that you don't need them. And Lululemon selling yoga pants and nice looking shoes, etc., is potentially in that category of things you probably don't need, or at least you can wear things longer. So I think this is purely my best guess, but I think when you look at slide 10, again, the small insert I've done here on the quarterly financials, I think at 20% plus revenue growth rate year and year for the next three quarters, I think seems like sell side analysts covering this company are not really in tune with what's going on macro wise. And that's why I'm highlighting it today. I think there's potential quite a significant downside risk to Lululemon.
All right, let's have a look at the macro calendar then for today. We did get the ADP payrolls change yesterday. That was disappointing, plus 132K versus the 300K expected. There was a note about they're seeing some softening. And then on the pay front, job stayers, 7.6% year-on-year earnings. This is, of course, a private payroll, so a lot of this is going to be from their database, and I suspect the national average be coming in a bit lower than that in the 5.5-ish range. Probably has to do with a lot of public sector employees in the mix, et cetera. And job changes getting 16.1% year-on-year. These aren't figures that I've looked into that raised my eyebrows, but actually that's not much of a change relative to the last several months for this particular survey. So slightly disappointing, but the market never knows how to treat that one. the more important one will be tomorrow's earnings and non-farm payrolls change. Today we have the U.S. manufacturing ISM manufacturing 51.9%, 51.9. Sorry, the expected reading, a very slight deceleration from July, and 51.3 is expected, or after the initial 51.3 on the S&P Global version of the manufacturing survey. It's the services where you see that big divergence between those two surveys. We also have the August Challenger jobs cuts, with a lot of sort of churning in some industries that overexpanded during the pandemic. I think that's been behind a pretty big pickup in jobs and layoffs by some companies. So it's not necessarily an area for concern, but of course, be on the lookout for any big spike there. And then it's on to tomorrow's payrolls and average hourly earnings and a U.S. August unemployment rate, and maybe a little bit more of a sense on whether the household survey, the one used to for the unemployment rate, continues to show the weakness that has not been reflected in the BLS establishment survey, the one that used for the non-farm payrolls. So watching for that, watching for more risk-off risk here if U.S. Treasury yields continue to rise, especially if we get strong data through tomorrow's jobs report and the dollar doing likewise. Stay careful out there. That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.